Vodka o'clock.
Hey everyone, it's Amber Love, and you are listening to Vodka O'Clock Podcast from AmberUnmasked.com. Don't forget that the website is intended for mature audiences. Today's episode, however, is not explicit. You are about to hear two interviews recorded at DexCon, one of the massive gaming conventions in New Jersey. These conversations are mostly about Dungeons & Dragons. There's the 5th edition that's just launching, and my friend Joe and I also got into a whole bunch of other nerdy topics. We talked quite a bit about Star Wars and Star Trek and the charity work that we do, because he's part of the 501st, and he helps me out. He's part of the group of volunteers that comes out to Superhero Weekend at Comic Fusion. So we nerded about all kinds of things, and it was a really fun conversation. And so after I talked to Joe, I talked to Dave, who's one of the important people with the Dungeons & Dragons Greyhawk Reborn launch. So I want you to check that out. It's got some good information about beginners and, you know, that you shouldn't be afraid to get started at any time, because D&D is just fun to do. So I wanted to tell you that I had a magnificent time at DexCon, because I always do. It's such a chill show. It's laid back. It's in this beautiful hotel. And even though it's over, the company that runs it is called Double Exposure. They run several other conventions throughout the year. So I urge you to go back through the Vodka O'Clock episodes and listen to the wonderful interview that I had with Avanel Wing. She's the vice president, and she had some really important things to say about diversity and including people and other populations that might be marginalized in the gaming community. So I just think that Avanel's voice is really important to hear the messages that she had to say about, you know, making gaming a safe subculture for everybody. And then hopefully you will be as impressed as I was and get out to one of their other shows like Metatopia or Dreamation. Dreamation is a massive show. And, you know, these are held right in Morristown, New Jersey. So it's a quaint little town, plenty of walking, plenty of like food, eatery things and whatnot. And the hotel, I kid you not, it's free parking inside the hotel garage. All you have to do is get your parking ticket thing, take it up to the counter when you're on your way out, and they'll validate the ticket for you. So I did a couple of recap write-ups on the blog, so check out AmberUnmasked.com, because it includes how much I loved the burlesque show, the D20 burlesque. That's a great troupe. They were so, like, there was funny stuff, there was dramatic stuff. They just really had their acts together. They were great. So any chance that you get to see D20 burlesque, go see them. So now let's get on with our D&D and other nerdy topics.
I'm Joe Rowe, here playing at DexCon, playing Greyhawk Reborn, which is the 5th edition of D&D. They revived the Greyhawk campaign. So we're playtesting it. Basically now the official edition doesn't come out until July or August at Gen Con.
Okay. So I usually run into you like 501st and other cosplay type events and stuff.
Wonder Woman Day.
Wonder Woman Day. So here we bump into each other at DexCon, which is different. And I recognized you, even outside of the outfit.
Yep, no TIE fighter pilot helmet on or Jedi robe.
Yeah. So when are you here alone, or do you have like a regular crew of people that you game with?
Actually, it's a regular crew. We started playing about a month and a half ago with this Greyhawk edition at the Wild Pig Comic in Kenilworth, mm-hmm. which is cool because it's like 4 blocks from my house, so that's awesome.
Yeah, Wild Pig's great.
Yeah, so we start playing over there, and then some of it's a continuation. Actually, that'll be on Saturday. That's our big continuation of that campaign, but then I've gotten to know a bunch of the guys over here, so we kind of just group together and have some fun.
Okay, so are you the DM?
No, not creative enough for that. No way.
Okay, so let's. What's cool about the DM process is that they have to come up with these campaigns and everything. Why would that intimidate you?
That's a good question. I'm more a logical thinker, so coming up with creative stuff outside of the box usually doesn't come easily to me. So it's easier for me to just take somebody else's campaign and get kind of lost in that. So,
So when you've advanced to this edition, are you keeping a character that you already have, or is like everything a brand new
thing? This is a brand new campaign, I have a brand new character, but from this point forward I can take this character, or I'm actually playing two at the moment, but I can take either one. They advance in level, kind of like if any of your buddy plays an MMO, it's the same type of thing. They advance in level, and then I can take it anywhere in the United States or the world, technically, and play that character at any event that's, you know, Greyhawk, or it can even be converted to regular 5th edition D&D.
Okay, I didn't realize that you could do that with characters.
Yes.
Okay, so where is that database tracked?
Wizards of the Coast, who run D&D, they give you like a number,
okay,
and it's assigned to that, and then you get, at the end of each adventure, you get a little piece of paper, which is basically a certification that you completed, you know, this event, and how many experience points you get, how much gold, and then if you look around, most people have like a huge binder, depending on how long they've been playing, and you know, you keep an adventure of track of all the adventures you've been on.
Okay. So how high up can a character become?
I think with 5th edition it's level 20.
All right. And
but that takes a lot of XP.
Okay. And how does this differ from your previous editions then?
It's basically the same concept. They're just changing the rules around a little bit, the way the mechanics work and stuff like that. So it's basically the leveling part of it is the same premise. It's just more the mechanics are changing. What happened is a lot of people became bored with 4th edition, because I played with tables where, like, if you have 6 or 7 guys at the table, it feels like it's 45 minutes between your turns, so you could take a nap, read the Wall Street Journal, War and Peace, and then, oh, it's time for me to go again, and then you roll your dice, and it's another 45 minutes. They're trying to speed it up a little bit more and bring the role-playing back more back into it.
So when you're at a table with that many people, because I've done that on Free RPG Day, and luckily, because it was meant to be a demo, it was pretty fast. Like, I think it only took us an hour or two.
Okay.
But it was intentionally designed that way. So when you're doing something, it seems like these can get really elaborate. You're talking about continuing over the weekend.
Right.
Are you guys playing as a team? Like, are you on the quest together, or are you cutthroat about it?
No, it's cooperative, so you're on a team together. I mean, I have been hit by a fireball from my own wizard in several adventures. Not pleasant.
By
whatsoever.
Your own?
Okay. Yeah. I played with one group that this guy insisted on fireballing his party every adventure we went through, even though we repeatedly told him, could you please stop that? But no, he just kept going.
Oh, no.
But normally, yes, it's cooperative.
Okay.
So.
All right. And this is like an offbeat question, just because it was something I was talking to Avanel about when I interviewed her for the pre-DexCon hour of Vodka O'Clock. We were trying to figure out what the like male to female ratio might be here, and because I thought it was not too bad, but maybe just because I'm in a D&D room right now, there's like no chicks except for me.
There's a couple actually. They're not here, obviously.
They're just not here.
Yeah,
I mean, it's still pretty empty. This is day one. So.
Yeah, and everybody's on break now.
Oh, okay.
Basically. All the adventures wrapped up. It's supposed to start again at about 8 o'clock. But, I've played at tables where I've had, you know, 50-50. DexCon seems to be more not the norm, where there's a higher percentage of females. I don't know if it's because of the LARP or the board gaming or whatever.
Yeah, it's always seemed pretty even here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's great, but...
Okay. Because one of the things that I had read was that on, it usually ends up being, I don't know if it's just online, but that they're just not treated well in the gaming community. And one of the things that I emphasized to Avi when I was talking to her was how just relaxed and casual and welcoming these shows are, because they do DexCon and they do Dreamation.
Right.
It just seemed okay, and it seemed like there's people of all, you know, teenagers running around.
Yeah, it's a pretty wide variety. I mean, you got people, you know, you got obviously single guys, you got teenagers, you have families running around with smaller children, and stuff like that. So yeah, this one, and I've been to PAX East a bunch of times, so those seem to be the two most friendly and cooperative, but like incorporating conventions I've been to.
Okay. Because, yeah, I don't know. Gen Con sounds really huge, but I've never been there.
I haven't been there either. Actually, James is going there. He invited me. Yeah. Him and, you know, Johnny Rocks.
Of course.
Okay, yeah.
We are talking about our 501st brethren. I'm not, like, technically honorary, but I just tag along like a little droid behind them.
You're pretty much one of us at this point.
I'm kind of there. I'm the droid in spandex. That is the deal. Which James has done, like, when we did the one groundbreaking ceremony for the playgrounds. I think that's when everybody had capes on the stormtroopers.
Yes, yes.
So, I love yep. that.
So, I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman weekend year, because I'll be doing my 501st costume on Saturday, but I'll actually be doing a villain costume on Sunday. So
we have, yeah, for anybody who listens to this, we're thinking of doing some more villains for Superhero Weekend. We've had some. It's not like we're anti-villain. And it's always funny because, like, the 501st are, you know, like, we don't want to call them bad guys. We just say
it
that...
It depends on your point of view.
It's your point of view. They're the man. They're basically the man. But let's see. We usually end up with different X-Men and different Justice League. We're usually pretty DC heavy. I don't know... But we've had the Riddler.
Yes.
Because Matt was a really great Riddler. And
we had Lex Luthor, which...
we did.
His name escapes. Jesse.
Jesse.
Yep.
So if anybody's interested in becoming a villain for Superhero Weekend, it's the first weekend of October, and that's our big charity event at Comic Fusion.
So which you do a great job at.
Thank
between you,
you
and Stacy and the whole store. You guys do a fantastic job. And
yeah.
It's for a great cause also, obviously.
Yeah. So we're going to start really buckling down those plans by next month, which is August. So with the convention being October and everything. So we always, I try to get the date as early as possible just so I can book the Star Wars guys because I know October is crazy with the charity events.
Yeah, it's been nuts this year, even more so. Even in the summer, we seem to be getting a lot more requests. I guess we're getting popular and there's this whole like library click. I guess they talk to one another. So we know once one person hears about us, they tell their friends and I guess they have like little librarian meetings or something like that or librarian conventions. And they start talking about us. And it's like, unfortunately, we've had to turn down some requests this year because we've been so booked up. It's like unbelievable.
That's cool, though.
I mean, it's good. I mean,
and the kids like Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't
they go crazy.
Which to me is really strange because I had thought that kids were really afraid of anybody with their face covered.
But
it's so familiar, I think, that I think it's kind of overrides the fact that they can't see a stormtrooper or a pilot.
Yeah, I guess they get excited seeing Darth Vader or a stormtrooper or a TIE fighter or whatever, biker scout or whatever. I mean, I think with the new movies coming out, it's only going to further, they'll be more familiar with it.
A new generation.
Yeah, a new generation, basically. You kind of saw it with the Clone Wars cartoon,
right.
which they stopped doing. Cause a lot of kids now ask for Captain Rex and stuff like that. But, with the new movies coming out in, like, every 2 years, they're pumping them out or something like that. Yeah, I think that would be a whole new generation that will open up to it. So, it should be cool.
Do you have opinions on the new movies?
No, I've been trying to stay spoiler-free.
Okay.
I like what J.J. Abrams did with Star Trek for the most part.
Yeah, me too. I like most of it.
Yeah, so,
I mean, it was okay. I found the last one a little bit hard to follow, but...
I liked
the Spock version, basically the changes like that he made to Spock.
That's funny. That's one of the things I didn't like.
Really?
Yeah, I'm such an original series guy.
Me too. I like original the best. I never really got into any of the other shows.
Yeah, I actually started catching up on the Next Generation on Netflix, which I do enjoy, but I've been lagging behind. But definitely an original series guy. And the whole Spock Uhura thing, I'm like, I didn't really know how to take that. But
yeah, well, it took, because I think the first time I sat through the original series, I misunderstood the Vulcans, and I was under the impression that they just didn't have feelings,
right.
Not that they were suppressing them, because I think I probably didn't pay attention to that Ponfar episode somehow, but then once I, you know, later on got a better understanding of it, I thought it was a deeper character development.
That's true. Well, and then with Spock, obviously, yeah, he's half human, half Vulcan, so there's that conflict within him. So
true. Do you do Spock? I don't know. You do, because yeah, you had a blue shirt.
Yes, I have a blue shirt. It's more medical. Actually, I need to get another one, but yeah, I don't have the pointy ears.
You know, I was thinking of wearing my ears tomorrow.
That'd be cool.
I have to go to a barbecue.
That'd be awesome.
Show up at a first, barbecue. I have to show up to a barbecue first. And I'd have to put the ears on at home just to make sure that they were on right.
Nice.
And hope they don't sweat off. Because it's pretty disgusting for those of you listening. If you're not familiar with the East Coast right now, it's about 1,000 degrees and humid.
Yeah, it's cooler on the surface of Mars at this point.
I think it is, you know. And it was great seeing the rover Curiosity making jokes about Independence Day. You gotta please follow Sarcastic Rover. It's the greatest Twitter feed ever.
And you can go to the barbecue and say, do these ears make my head look big? You
know, yeah, exactly. I could say that I time traveled to the barbecue, because apparently it's also on at a new house where the road doesn't technically exist yet.
Oh, nice.
So I'm going to have fun trying to find that.
Yeah, that should be curious. I'd be even funnier if you couldn't really find it and you had to stop.
And I had to stop and ask directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what to wear with the ears. I'll work on that.
Or you could do like the Spock and put the Edie's sweatband over it for first, in case you run into anybody.
Hold them in, yeah. So, do you dress up for Halloween at all? Or is it just like,
actually,
forget it, I've dressed up all year.
Actually, ironically enough, no, I do not dress up for Halloween.
I usually don't get to either.
Sometimes if I go to like somebody's having a costume party at their house, I'll just throw on like a cheaper, like an older version of a Jedi I have or something like that. Uh-huh. But yeah, for the most part, no.
I mean, we kind of get it out of our systems all year round.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much we dress up all year round, so Halloween loses that specialness, I guess, to put a costume on.
Yeah.
Although it's still better than I'm sure you remember as a kid, there's those non-flame retardant vinyl with the
plastic mask
with the string on it that made you sweat like a million.
You couldn't see.
Yeah.
It could, and that was always like the safety instructions was you shouldn't wear a mask because you need to be able to see. But every outfit came with a mask.
Of course.
Yeah. And now you get to wear helmets and stuff where can you even see out of most of them?
It depends on the helmet. I'm a TIE fighter pilot. I can see about just below the bridge of my nose. So if there's a small kid in front of me, unless he starts tapping my leg or something like that, I really can't see him. But straight ahead, I can see. It's not like a Tusken Raider where you basically have like two little peepholes. Imagine trying to look through your door.
Right.
One time I wore Darth Vader because we were in Star Wars in costume and normal Vader couldn't make it. And I remember the minute I put that on, it was just like great sucking sound because all the air got sucked out of there and the lenses fogged up. And now I'm walking through the middle of I still call it Brendan Byrne Arena, whatever they call it, the Izod Center now. And my lenses were all fogged up, and I'm trying to, I'm sweating because it feels like it's about a million degrees inside the suit in the arena. Yeah, that was pleasant.
Now, did you, I remember one of our events, we had one of the Red Guards.
The Royal Guard,
the
yes.
Royal Guard. Yep. Was that you?
No, that's Chris. He's another member of ours from South Jersey.
Okay, well, this is why, because I ran into him somewhere else.
Okay.
And he's like, oh, you don't recognize me. Well, no, of course I don't.
You don't have your helmet on.
There's no helmet on. And it was one of those helmets where it's not even like some of the superhero helmets are more like helms, you know, Viking style.
Like
Magneto
type of thing.
Yeah, where the face is exposed or something. But anything from Star Wars, forget it. You're just like, no, you cannot see your face.
No, unless you're an Imperial officer on the Imperial side, you cannot see. You're covered. Your head's covered, pretty much.
Right.
If you're a Rebel, it's a little more, because like, I have a Rebel Fleet Trooper, and that's the famous salable helmet. So, I mean, it's just basically a helmet on top of your head, kind of like the superheroes, and that you can obviously fully see.
See it and breathe a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And one of the cool things about your troop here that's in the Northeast is that you have a person tiny enough to be a Jawa who actually looks Jawa size.
Michelle
is, she's one of the sweetest people ever, and
absolutely.
She is so freaking cute in her Jawa outfit.
Yeah, she's definitely Jawa size. And then if you go to New York, there's one guy called King Jawa, and he's like 6'3" or something like that. So it would be pretty cool to see them next to one another, just contrasting style.
He should be Chewbacca. What is he thinking?
Well, he's a little short for Chewbacca, but I guess for stilts.
Do you guys change up your outfits like every year? Do you just try to kind of master one character?
Well, it depends. Some people have costume acquisition disorder.
that's a bona fide thing in the DSM-5.
I just made that up, I think. But Terry's got, every time I turn around, he's got a new costume. James seems to have quite a collection. Me, I've been pretty steady since I've joined, so you just try and maintain it. I guess it depends when the bug hits you. Now some of our guys are branching out into like the custom Mando group and stuff like that, so.
Because when I look at the Star Wars outfits, they seem like there are so many different pieces to them. They seem like really expensive to put together.
Yeah, it's not cheap. Obviously, you can't go to Walmart and buy a completed costume. I mean, some are cheap. Like, if you just want to get in basic crewman, that'll probably run you a couple of $100, but that's just a jumpsuit, a hat, a belt, and some gloves, basically. If you want to, like, Darth Vader and Boba Fett are the most expensive, and that's going to probably run you at least $3,000-ish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not cheap.
And you don't know them just to look. You just think, oh, it's somebody dressed as Darth Vader.
Yeah, and well, obviously our costumes are movie quality.
But they're, yeah,
so
they're
you can pick up a Ruby's at Toys R Us. And
right, it's a different caliber when you take a closer inspection of it. And that's one of the Boba Fett's many that I've run into over the years. I had a picture with him, and I was so excited. And later on, somebody had like commented on the picture saying, oh, that guy put in like this amount of money into that outfit to try and get like every little transistor thing, like every bit of it, so that there would be articulating parts. It's just
the lights
amazing.
On the chest plate have to be in a certain sequence, and it depends on the movie too.
Of course.
Some of them are Empire Strikes Back, some of them are Return of the Jedi, like Darth Vader. In each the original trilogy, his costume's different. So if you want to be a New Hope Vader, it's a two-tone paint scheme, where by Return of the Jedi, he's nice and shiny, stuff like that. Or if in Revenge of the Sith, then that's another one. So actually, that's four of Darth Vader versions. So depending on which, it's not even interchangeable. You'd have to get almost a whole new costume besides some basic parts to do the different versions.
Do you have a favorite of the actual movies?
Always the original. It was Star Wars.
Star Wars. Yeah, it was Star Wars on the marquee. Yeah. I mean, that's what it was called.
Yeah,
that's what
now
keychain
said. Now it's a New Hope
said.
For all the new
kids.
Yeah,
I don't get that.
Well, I guess they had to differentiate somehow. So
I know. And it's one of those things where I really never noticed that it said like Episode 4.
Yeah, well,
you know, like it didn't as ever
it
watching
came after,
it.
It came after the fact, I guess, as the obviously exploded back in 1977, and as they started coming out with Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, they needed to differentiate. I mean, Lucas always said that he had like 6 episodes built in, but I guess that they didn't know. I guess they didn't need it when they thought the movie was going to make $4 or something like that.
So, you have the geek dilemma of liking both Star Trek and Star Wars.
I don't really see it as a dilemma.
You don't get quizzed on which one you need to like more or why one's better than
no,
the other?
No.
Because I see that quiz a lot.
No, thankfully most of my friends are pretty accepting. I've gotten some strange looks, especially when I showed up to the one Wonder Woman Day in my Star Trek outfit.
Right.
And I was supposed to receive a medal for the 501st that day. So here I am getting a picture taken with James receiving my, I think it was my 25th troop or whatever it was, medal. And I'm in a Star Trek outfit. So Admiral Thrawn was not pleased. And quite a couple of the pictures we took on the steps, he was giving me a scowl.
I see. Yeah, I don't know. It could be a crossover event. Star Trek seems to cross over with a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you figure now these days, between Battlestar Galactica, Star Wars, and Star Trek, you know, even Doctor Who, for that matter, I mean, you have a whole huge crossover. It seems that at this point, geekdom, or nerddom, or whatever you want to call it, everybody dabbles in something else besides. It's not like, oh, I'm just in the 501st, or I'm just part of the fleet for Battlestar Galactica, or whatever, or in the 1701st for Star Trek. Most people branch out to different things.
Yeah, I'm so limited in any of the shows that I've, like, I've never watched Battlestar. I've never watched Stargate.
Okay. I watched the original Battlestar. I loved it as a kid.
I remember it being on, but I don't remember a thing about it except for, like, the beautiful sandy hair of the main character. Like, he had that beautiful feathered hair.
Oh, Richard Hatch or Kurt Benedict?
I don't know. I think it was the character that they why am I blanking now? They turned it into a girl.
That's Starbuck.
Starbuck. So I think,
that's not Richard Hatch. That's the Kurt Benedict character.
Okay.
And what I didn't realize was how it seemed there was a lot more episodes when I was a kid, and I forget the exact number, but it was only on basically for one season, so it was maybe like 24 episodes of it.
I think our brains are a little bit different the way we watch TV now, because I'm a Netflix watcher too, so I will just marathon the hell out of anything for like a couple of days and absorb as much as I can, and then I end up repeating that, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to stay in bed today and then not move.
Yeah, thank you. You reminded me I really need to catch up on The Walking Dead. pretty much I can't look at Facebook half the time because I'm so far behind.
So do you have a favorite Star Trek pilot, Captain?
Captain Kirk, of course.
Is it Kirk?
Yeah,
okay.
It's got to be Kirk.
Right, because I mean,
Picard's cool. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I was gonna say Picard's cool, but I'm not sure if it's Picard that's cool or if it's that Patrick Stewart is so cool.
It could be a combo of both that Patrick Stewart just makes, because he pretty much does make everything cool.
Yeah.
And so the British accent, you know, it gives a level of sophistication to whatever character he.
That's true. Yeah. Well, next time I see you in your Star Trek, then I want to see some Captain Kirk roles.
Okay.
You know, I want to see some dive roles going on.
Well, I do practice martial arts, so it shouldn't be that far off.
I want to do this, and I want it on camera.
Can we get a guy dressed up in a Gorn suit? With that,
probably
music in the background.
In our network of friends, we can probably have this happen.
At least the helmet.
they're usually at the big like New York shows or something like that. But I don't know. We'll have to see how we can wrangle some good special effects people.
We have to wrangle up a Gorn.
Yeah, it might be possible. Okay, well, Joe, I'll let you get back to your gaming and stuff. I don't know. It looks like people are maybe filtering back in.
Yeah, surely. We should be starting up again.
And so do you have, like, the Twitters and anything where people can find you? Or
no, I'm pretty much not a Twitter guy. So
you're off-grid. You're a gamer that's off-the grid.
Yeah, pretty much.
Keep
a low profile.
You're a paper-and-pen gamer, so.
Yeah, well, pretty much. I follow Twitter every once in a while, but I probably follow, like, three things.
Okay. So. And, of course, I'm sure I'm one of them.
Yeah, of course. But you can always find me on the 501st boards, the 501st NER. That's the local New Jersey garrison, where you can, if you want to come see us at what events we're going to be at, you can check out our website, and there's a calendar posted over there. You can see where we're going, including Wonder Woman Day.
Yeah, exactly. So our whole...
But everybody already knows about Wonder Woman Day.
We hope so. We get asked about it, which is good, because
awesome.
It was hard to get to that point. So definitely looking forward to October. You've seen the new store, right?
Yes, so, I was at the new store last year.
Right. Okay.
Cool.
All right, Joe, thanks so much.
No problem, Amber.
Okay, and now I've wandered down the hallway a little bit of ways and found somebody who looks like he's in charge. So, Dave, can you introduce yourself?
My name's Dave Guerrieri. I'm the lead admin for Greyhawk Reborn.
Okay, so I didn't realize that there was a difference between Greyhawk Reborn and Edition 5. Is it the same?
We're using the 5th edition rules.
Okay.
The playtest rules right now, we'll be adapting to the new rules as they come out. And Greyhawk is just the world we're adventuring in.
And what is it then?
Greyhawk?
Yes.
Greyhawk is the first mass-produced fantasy campaign that was created by TSR back in the day, Gary Gygax, Dave Aronson. A lot of folks remember it fondly, going back, 35 years?
Yeah. All the original adventures
40 years?
Were all Greyhawk.
Yeah.
All the
Greyhawk
classics.
First and second edition of the game.
Two of Horrors, all them, all Greyhawk.
Yep.
Okay, so when you change editions, what kind of information carries over?
The classes, the general rules are there. The same classes. You still have fighters, mages, wizards, clerics. You still have the same weapons. You have long swords. You have the armors. You have the same magic items and such. The math behind the game is changing to a great extent. And then sometimes also the mechanics of the game begins changing in terms of role play versus the statistics, the numbers, the dice rolling.
So did they invent like a new die for it?
No, no new die. Just
like a big giant 50-sided.
Yeah, it's really, to be honest with you, what 5e has done, in my opinion, is take the best versions, the best things from the other versions of D&D, and have kind of smooshed it together. I was a little concerned when it first came out that it was going to work well, but it seems to have done well. They play tested it extensively. They've had over been a free play test for almost 2 years now. They've had over 100,000 playtesters download stuff.
Why would it take 2 years to playtest?
To make it right.
Okay.
To make it right. The fourth edition of the game was not very well received. It was a great, great difference from the previous versions, from the previous version. And a lot of folks just did not follow it through. There's a lot of complex reasons for that, but same thing happened at 3. Some folks get a little hesitant to move into new editions.
When did you start playing?
Summer of 1980.
Okay. And so was that like a high school thing that you started meeting up with
just
folks?
College. Just out of
college, okay.
After freshman year of college, one of the guys that started playing at college I hung around with, and he came back one day, and we got a couple of books, and next thing you know, we're wandering around, and we found a few more guys, and we started playing there, and just have continued since then in one form or another.
Okay, so I imagine since you're sitting back here behind the fancy looking table with all the equipment and stuff, you have the expertise. So are you normally a dungeon master, or do you just like hang out and chill?
Both. I DM and I play. Pulled together our Greyhawk Reborn campaign. Basically, it's a living style campaign. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, what is that?
It's a shared world campaign. Most of the time, what happens is people take their dungeons that they either create or the adventures that they buy and such, and they'll run it for their friends in their basement at their dining room table and things like that, college dorm. Wizards have come up with a concept of a shared world campaign, so it was kind of taking that home game, which is what that was called, into something where you could go different places and play then. And you could bring your character along and play with other folks who have similar characters, so it becomes a shared world. In 1999, when third edition came out, they came out with the Greyhawk, Living Greyhawk campaign that ended up with over 20,000 players across the world playing.
Okay, because it sounds, so it's basically like a pencil and paper version of what's done online.
It is similar.
Of what's
similar.
In game, like on, yes. Online video games.
You're just
MMOs, just
exactly.
Without the O.
Yes. You're just, you're not limited to the code, if you will. You're limited to what the people who are your creative teams are doing, the people who are creating adventures and creating those worlds to for the others to adventure in.
Okay, so how do you share a world with different dungeon masters then? Because I would think that every once in a while people aren't as picky with a particular rule or something.
In Greyhawk Reborn, we have a team that works together, and we've created a basic framework of campaign, a basic administration, if you will, so that we are all coming from the same philosophy in terms of backgrounds, in terms of magic items, in terms of power, in terms of role-playing, and just in the mechanics of the game. So we've created a framework from within that we function in, and our characters or our players that come and play their characters within that framework.
So are there classes to learn to be the Game Master?
No.
I would think that there would be something like at conventions where you get like training
into
these are the rules and
it would be a good thing to have that. Yes, there's plenty of blogs out there and places where you get some advice. Oftentimes some of the bigger cons or even some of the smaller ones, they will set up some seminars to help some folks. But most of the time it's first it's trial by fire to a great extent. A lot of it is also oftentimes when they're releasing a new edition of the game, and I don't have the starter set handy here, but oftentimes they'll have the DM's guidelines, how to play, how to DM type of thing there. Just a very brief synopsis, some advice.
Do you, only run for like adult level ages, or do you run
forever? We can skew how we're doing our role playing based on who's sitting around the table.
Okay.
We can certainly be family friendly when we need to.
Okay. Because I didn't know if they had sort of like any kind of tournament brackets, like for ages or anything.
No.
Okay. And now, one of the things that I notice is when you're sitting around the table and you're running these campaigns, there's automatically the feeling of being social.
Yes.
Whereas in the video games, you're not seeing your other people, but you might have your headsets, you know, on, and it's still social, but it's in a completely different environment. You're still kind of isolated and kind of alone. So, what feelings do you get just for you when you're around the table and you're playing?
Well, that's a good question. I enjoy the interaction with other people. I'm a people person. I'm a school teacher in life. I've worked some other part-time jobs. They've all been in retail that have been out there dealing with the public. So just the interacting with other folks is very enjoyable with me. Playing in the Living Style campaigns, playing in D&D in general, has kind of learning how to problem solve, learning how to work through obstacles, overcome obstacles, learning how to work together as a group to make the sum of the group greater than the sum of the parts type of thing. Just working together, it's very enjoyable, and overcoming obstacles. And you know, at the end of the day, after several sessions, you're leveling, your character's getting more powerful, he's getting stronger, he or she's getting more hit points, is, you know, finds a better magic item, finds better magic armor, so you're getting some data points there, if you will, that also helps.
It seems like it would be really a way to teach kids, or really, I mean, it doesn't have to be kids, but I guess anybody of any age, because it's kind of just a life skill, without it seeming like teaching, in order to, you know, like people, like you said, get through obstacles. These are things that we see, you know, we have to deal with every day, and if you could just, you know, have your alias as, okay, what would my magical person do? What would, you know?
It's, you know, ultimately, it's a role-playing game.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of ways you can take that role-playing, but ultimately, going back 40 years to when D&D came out, it was assuming the personality of another fantasy character. You're creating it up. You have, instead of it being an actor and it just being lines, you have some abilities, you have some skills, you have some magic items. So you're playing to the character on paper, but ultimately they have some personality. They, you know, you devise your background and what you want them to be, whether it's a loyal, faithful, heroic paladin, or it's the sneaky thief that's always trying to get in somebody's pockets. But whatever, that's the persona that you're assuming when you're playing. So it does give people some opportunities to live in some other worlds that they normally wouldn't, try some other things.
Do you find that when you're developing a character, you take the traits that you feel you already are strong with, or do you purposely go to the opposite side? Like, are you a chaotic evil?
Chaotic evils tend to not work together. It is a shared experience game, even if it's a home game. 5 or 6 people sitting down at the table. You have to work together to overcome the problems. And if you've got that chaotic evil thief there, it might turn out well for him because he stabs everybody while they're sleeping and walks away with everything, but it's not going to be part of that team effort of the game, and I think the game really fosters that. But I kind of play, honestly, it varies. I enjoy playing most of the character classes. Right now I have a monk I'm playing, enjoying the absolute crap out of him. He's turning into almost a wrestler.
A monk that would be...
He's a wrestler. He's a luchador. He wears a mask. He has black mask, black tights, black boots, black cape, no shirt. And
wow,
that's him.
Okay.
And other times, you know, it's that stand-up paladin. It all kind of depends what you're in the mood for playing.
Well, with all of the D&D stuff, that's typically the sword and sorcery fantasy world. So do you have any kind of favorite other entertainment that lives in that world? Are you, you know, do you go through books and movies or anything?
Read most of the books early on. you know, Tolkien, Zalanzi, which is Castle Amber series, the Elric series from Michael Moorcock, David Eddings, the list goes on and on. So I read a lot of those earlier, Jack Vance, and then the, you know, the movies. The movies are very influential, even going back to things like Highlander.
That's one of the best.
Oh, absolutely. even going back in things like the original Camelot, there was a King Arthur one with Sean Connery and Audrey Hepburn. I don't know if you're, was it Hepburn? But it showed them in their later years. That was very, very good.
I don't remember that. The only thing I can think of was Excalibur.
Yeah, oh, Excalibur is another one, yeah.
Oh, what's
Nigel
her name?
Terry.
Yeah,
yep, and Nicole Williamson.
I was thinking of the Morgana.
Oh, Helen Mirren.
Yes.
One of her earlier roles.
Oh,
and Patrick
God.
Stewart and Liam Neeson were in that, too.
It's one of those things where it might not be the greatest movie ever, but you have to watch it.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Everybody that is in that movie is unbelievable.
Highlander and Excalibur, absolutely. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
You pull inspiration from there, and you pull inspiration from... I don't remember the original name of it, but the Arthur wrote them. There was the big King Arthur one.
There was the Morte de Arthur.
Yeah.
It was the book.
Yeah,
so, right?
That's the one I'm thinking of.
And I thought that the...
I think Terry White did some too, didn't he? Somebody had come up with something that was pretty popular.
I know that they sort of, like, they did more research and came out with, like, a more accurate version of what the people likely were. And I kind of dug that. It was the, like, Clive Owen and mm-hmm. Keira Knightley, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that, I was surprised at that I liked it.
Yeah.
Because it just was so very different.
Definitely. But, yeah, you pull inspiration from, you know, whatever inspires you. And everybody does different things. Right now, for some of the stuff that's floating around in my head, I'm pulling inspiration from actually Dune.
Okay, well, that's
one
classic.
Of my characters is kind of has certain attributes of Paul Atreides.
So I noticed that you're not in, like, cloaks and, you know, there's no candles and sigils around the table. It's
never
pretty chill here.
Yeah, never been one of those.
Okay.
I'm not dressing up, running in sewers. I'm not Tom Hanks from that horrible 80s movie, Bases and Monsters.
I think a lot of people might get the wrong idea of what gaming is. And it's not to say that those are bad things.
No.
Hell, throw your cloak on and go and have fun.
My philosophy is, and this is a gaming philosophy, there have been lots of edition wars in D&D between 5e, 4e, 3e, and stuff. Play the game you want with the people you enjoy playing with. It's all about, I don't care what edition of the game you play, I don't care what game you play, I don't care what you're doing. It's about enjoying what you're doing, enjoying the people you're hanging out with. You know, it becomes a social aspect. I golf. I'm an avid golfer, and it's the same thing there. There are people I don't want to golf with, they're no fun to golf with. There's other people I enjoy it. It's a social game. Go out, enjoy interacting with people, have some fun. Let other people have fun. Those who like dressing up and doing those things, go. Great. Have a great time. Enjoy what you're doing. You know, life's too short not to enjoy it.
Do you have family members that you normally game with, or do you, like, sort of escape and this is, like, your thing on your own?
It's different. Yeah, I don't really have family members. My grandson played for a little bit, but, you know, he kind of grew out of it. My wife never took a liking to it or anything, and I have some longtime friends, a couple of the folks that I started playing with way back in the summer of 80, I'm still playing with, and then I've just picked up a lot of new folks. So.
How often do you meet? Because I know some people are like kind of have like a regular schedule.
Yeah, we're
for
together
gaming.
About once a week now. Again, we're doing a lot of the organizing administration for our Greyhawk Reborn campaign,
okay.
So we're not playing as much as we'd like to because we're doing the groundwork so other folks can come to places like this and enjoy playing the game.
Okay, and so where can people get more information?
On Greyhawk Reborn, we have a Facebook page,
okay.
We have a Facebook group, and we also have a Yahoo group. We're hoping in the next year to have our own website and be building that, but again, it just takes time. So
okay.
We're playing, we're running our games everywhere from Nova, Baltimore, not Baltimore, but Northern Virginia, D.C. area. Most of us are located in central Pennsylvania near the Gettysburg area, so we're doing a lot of play there. We're up at MEPACON. We're here and hope to be here for future years and are even looking into getting up into Connecticut and some other places. So.
Okay, so does this version of it, is it going to have a lifespan or?
Don't know. It's so new. It just really the first rules came out actually today. The starter sets were released today for 5th edition.
Okay,
so and that's the rules of D&D, and then there's what we're doing with the campaign.
So you never know when something's going to change.
It'll be around for a while.
Yeah, they seem to last for quite a while.
Yeah. And
because, I mean, the amount of work that goes into it.
Yeah, if they changed it regularly, they wouldn't have a whole lot of people buying it.
Right, and that's something that's really different than, like, the video game releases,
yes.
Where video games, they just, you know, you get a patch installed, or, you know, maybe there's an addition and, you know, every few years. I mean, Warcraft is totally different than the games that I played, so those were just patches that...
Yeah.
But,
improved gameplay.
I never stood in line for, like, you know, 6 hours waiting for an expansion pack.
Exactly.
So that's good. And you said the other shared information is Wizards of the Coast.
Yes, the new rules just came up on, was part of the rules. They're releasing them for free, some of them. So anybody who wants to learn how to play, go to Wizards of the Coast, or I guess it's DungeonsandDragons.com, and download the starter set there, and they can pick up what they need to and start playing right there.
Okay.
Starter set box set that came out today is available probably at your local friendly game store.
Yeah.
And, you know, $20 or $30 will get you some of the rules and an adventure you can be playing in 20 minutes. Pre-gens are already in it, some dice, everything you need to go.
Well, that's cool, Dave. Thanks for venturing out to New Jersey.
Yeah, happy to be here.
All right, thanks.
I hope you enjoyed all of the DexCon coverage that you found here at AmberUnmasked.com. And just to remind you that I will be making an appearance at the Boston Comic Con for the first time. That's August 8th, 9th weekend. I think 9th is a Saturday. And I will be on the LGBT panel at 1 o'clock. So come out for that. And I'm not sure if I will have any other scheduling opportunities, but that's the one that's definitely on the books. So it'll be my first time at Boston Comic Con. I hope it's a wonderful, exciting time because I'm pretty nervous about going up there. So definitely look for me then. And remember that your feedback is always appreciated. You can give us ratings on iTunes and Stitcher and stuff like that, and, you know, and just drop by Twitter. You can find me at Elizabeth Amber on Twitter. So, you know, say how much you like the show.